A faint yellow glow was spreading swiftly across the eastern sky, even as Leon watched. Selene, the inner moon, edged itself above the horizon. With astonishing speed, the entire gibbous disk climbed out of the sea, flooding the beach with sudden light. And in that burst of brilliance, Leon saw that he was not alone. The girl was sitting on one of the boats, about 50 yards farther along the beach. Her back was turned toward him, and she was staring out to sea, apparently unaware of his presence. Leon hesitated, not wishing to invade her solitude, and also being uncertain of the local mores in these matters. It seemed highly likely at such a time and place that she was waiting for someone. It might be safest and most tactful to turn quietly back to the village. He had decided too late. As if startled by the flood of new light along the beach, the girl looked up and at once caught sight of him. She rose to her feet with an unhurried grace, showing no signs of alarm or annoyance. Indeed, if Leon could have seen her face clearly in the moonlight, he would have been surprised at the quiet satisfaction it expressed. Only 12 hours ago, Laura would have been indignant had anyone suggested that she would meet a complete stranger here on this lonely beach when the rest of her world was slumbering. Even now, she might have tried to rationalize her behavior, to argue that she felt restless and could not sleep, and had therefore decided to go for a walk. But she knew in her heart that this was not the truth. All day long, she had been haunted by the image of that young engineer, whose name and position she had managed to discover without, she hoped, arousing too much curiosity among her friends. It was not even luck that she had seen him leave the guest house. She had been watching most of the evening from the porch of her father's residence on the other side of the street. And it was certainly not luck, but deliberate and careful planning that had taken her to this point on the beach as soon as she was sure of the direction Leon was heading. He came to a halt a dozen feet away. Did he recognize her? Did he guess that this was no accident? For a moment her courage almost failed her, but it was too late now to retreat. Then he gave a curious, twisted smile that seemed to light up his whole face and made him look even younger than he was. "Hello," he said. "I never expected to meet anyone at this time of night. I hope I haven't disturbed you." "Of course not," Laura answered, trying to keep her voice as steady and emotionless as she could. "I'm from the ship, you know. I thought I'd have a look at Thalassa while I'm here." At those last words, a sudden change of expression crossed Laura's face. The sadness he saw there puzzled Leon, for it could have no cause. And then, with an instantaneous shock of recognition, he knew that he had seen this girl before, and understood what she was doing here. This was the girl who had smiled at him when he came out of the ship. No, that was not right. He had been the one who smiled. There seemed nothing to say. They stared at each other across the wrinkled sand, each wondering at the miracle that had brought them together out of the immensity of time and space. Then, as if in unconscious agreement, they sat facing each other on the gunwale of the boat, still without a word. "This is folly," Leon told himself. "What am I doing here? What right have I, a wanderer passing through this world, to touch the lives of its people? I should make my apologies and leave this girl to the beach and the sea that are her birthright, not mine." Yet he did not leave. The bright disk of Selene had risen a full hand's breadth above the sea when he said at last, "What's your name?"
"I'm Laura,"
she answered in the soft, lilting accent of the islanders, which was so attractive but not always easy to understand. "And I'm Leon Carroll, assistant propulsion engineer, Starship Magellan." She gave a little smile as he introduced himself, and at that moment Leon was certain that she already knew his name. At the same time, a completely irrelevant and whimsical thought struck him. Until a few minutes ago, he had been dead tired, just about to turn back for his overdue sleep. Yet now he was fully awake and alert, poised, as it were, on the brink of a new and unpredictable adventure. But Laura's next remark was predictable enough. "How do you like Thalassa?" "Give me time," Leon countered. "I've only seen Palm Bay and not much of that."
"Will you be here very long?"
The pause was barely perceptible, but his ear detected it. This was the question that really mattered. "I'm not sure," he replied, truthfully enough. "It depends on how long the repairs take."
"What went wrong?"
"Oh, we ran into something too big for our meteor screen to absorb, and bang, that was the end of the screen, so we've got to make a new one."
"And you think you can do that here?"
"We hope so. The main problem will be lifting about 1 million tons of water up to the Magellan. Luckily, I think the Lhasa can spare it.
Water? I don't understand.
Well, you know that a starship travels at almost the speed of light. Even then, it takes years to get anywhere, so that we have to go into suspended animation and let the automatic controls run the ship.
Laura nodded. Of course, that's how our ancestors got here.
Well, the speed would be no problem if space was really empty, but it isn't. A starship sweeps up thousands of atoms of hydrogen, particles of dust, and sometimes larger fragments every second of its flight. At nearly the speed of light, these bits of cosmic junk have enormous energy and could soon burn up the ship. So we carry a shield about 1 mile ahead of us and let that get burned up instead. Do you have umbrellas on this world?
Why, yes, Laura replied, obviously baffled by the incongruous question.
Then you can compare a starship to a man moving head down through a rainstorm behind the cover of an umbrella. The rain is the cosmic dust between the stars, and our ship was unlucky enough to lose its umbrella.
And you can make a new one of water?
Yes. It's the cheapest building material in the universe. We freeze it into an iceberg which travels ahead of us. What could be simpler than that? Laura did not answer. Her thoughts seemed to have veered onto a new track. Presently, she said, her voice so low and wistful that Leon had to bend forward to hear it against the rolling of the surf.
And you left Earth 100 years ago.
104. Of course, it seems only a few weeks since we were deep sleeping until the autopilot revived us. All the colonists are still in suspended animation. They don't know that anything's happened.
And presently you'll join them again and sleep your way onto the stars.
Leon nodded, avoiding her eye. That's right. Planet fall will be a few months late, but what does that matter on a trip that takes 300 years?
Laura pointed to the island behind them and then to the shoreless sea at whose edge they stood. It's strange to think that your sleeping friends up there will never know anything of all this. I feel sorry for them.
Yes, only we 50 or so engineers will have any memories of the Lhasa. To everyone else in the ship, our stop here will be nothing more than 100-year-old entry in the logbook.
He glanced at Laura's face and saw again that sadness in her eyes.
Why does that make you unhappy?
She shook her head, unable to answer. How could one express the sense of loneliness that Leon's words had brought to her? The lives of men and all their hopes and fears were so little against the inconceivable immensities that they had dared to challenge. The thought of that 300-year journey, not yet half completed, was something from which her mind recoiled in horror. And yet, in her own veins was the blood of those earlier pioneers who had followed the same path to Thalassa centuries ago.